Empire Lines uncovers the unexpected, often two-way, flows of empires through art. Interdisciplinary thinkers use individual artworks as artifacts of imperial exchange, revealing the how and why of the monolith empire. Hello, how are you doing?
Fine, thank you.
We met very, very briefly.
Oh, yes, we did, in a clothes shop.
Exactly, yes. We did meet in a clothes shop. In this episode, artist and curator Lubaina Himid unravels entangled histories of transatlantic slavery and textile production across continents and Britain's museum collections via lost threads.
My name's Lubaina Himid. I'm an artist, mostly a painter, but I also make installations, sometimes in museums and sometimes in random places. Today, my work is in the Holborn Museum in Bath. It's called Lost Threads.
And Lost Threads are a series of textiles cascading round the columns, crumbled and heaped in the galleries inside. There are 400 metres here of Dutch wax fabric, reflective of the movement of oceans and waterways that have been used to transport cotton across continents. Tell me about the origins of this artwork in particular.
It was commissioned by the British Textile Biennial in East Lancashire, and they wanted me to work with a museum up there called Gawthorpe Hall. It's a huge textile collection. They wanted me to sort of reflect on what wasn't in the collection, if you like. There's a barn on the property, an enormous, beautiful old barn. And so I constructed these 400-metre-length pieces of fabric, and they sort of looped and cascaded through this barn. And because the barn is not an airtight place, there were sort of drafts that came and went. And as you walked in amongst these kind of waves of fabric, they sort of moved very gradually. And it was sort of like being underwater or like being in a ship. And that kind of reflected the kind of history of the whole trade in people and goods and fabric. When I was offered the use of this barn to kind of make an intervention, to make a statement about cotton and about textiles, about the region, about politics, it was an absolutely... I was a gift, really. And what I'm trying to show here is the richness of the history of the trade in slaves, the cotton industry in the Northwest, in the North generally, and the complicated history of that, and the continuing sort of backwards and forwards legacies of that kind of colonial history. What you will see is waves, oceans, seas, histories and patterns interweaving their way through the building. The 400 metres of cloth goes up and over, in and up and over, from one end of the building to the other. I'm trying to show an opulence rather than showing some of the suffering of working in those factories that those cotton workers had to do, or the abject horror of working in cotton fields in Northern Carolina, I want to show the kind of richness of that contribution. You can look at cities like Liverpool and London and focus on the terror and the horror it took to make those cities. But there's also a kind of strength that people can get, that we must try and get in a way, from the fact that we contributed to how this rich history of this country was able to continue. I'm kind of pretty determined to sort of see and make a positive, looking forward ownership, spreading the word that we all contributed to what we have, and to try to make sure that those that did contribute at a really kind of basic level that made a lot of people incredibly rich are in the end the richest because they had something to contribute. These fabrics are contemporary, but what they signify is a history of a colonial sucking of the energy from one continent in order to build up another one.
And you yourself are from Zanzibar in East Africa, which has a very strong textile tradition. In previous exhibitions, you've reproduced sets of kanga, for instance. Can you talk about your engagement with textiles?
All my life, I've been surrounded by fabric. My mother was a textile designer, but also by kangas from Zanzibar, from East Africa. And what I always loved about them was that you have this way of putting a border and then, as it were, a field and then text. These three elements that sometimes kind of juxtapose with each other and sometimes are strangely in opposition to each other. The colours are incredibly kind of well thought through and well designed. In a way, I think if I had stayed in Zanzibar and my father hadn't died, I would maybe have been someone who designed kangas for a living. It was a natural, ordinary thing to do, to think about colour and pattern and shape. But in my paintings, I often use the text part of it to say something either about civil rights or about history or about just being the person I am, really. Sometimes they're quite sort of obscure texts, sometimes Walter Benjamin texts even. But they're a way of engaging with audiences who are reading English. So that's not every audience, but somehow there's a thing about fabric, thing about textiles that sort of brings audiences closer. It's not usually something that people don't understand because everyone is wearing something. They might be wearing an ordinary striped shirt or something, but they understand cloth, they understand fabric. It's a way of talking about how women wearing kangas are, in a sense, wearing speaking clothes, saying something to the outside world, something to each other. And it's a way of getting audiences, in a sense, to bring their own histories and histories of what they've worn, who they know, to an exhibition and kind of exchange with the work in that way.
And I think you really capture how this domestic object, this craft, and I'm using air quotes here, traverses that boundary between both terror and beauty. I first came across your work in your interventions in ceramics, an exhibition actually in Cardiff, where you spoke about obliterating the beauty of domestic objects like bowls, tureens, jelly molds with cold, hard facts. How do you think textiles can add to that conversation by looking at how histories are interwoven?
I suppose the difference between the textile work and the ceramic work is that I haven't intervened into the material here. I've shaped it and moulded it and tried to connect it to the building so that in the ballroom it's obvious that it isn't a carpet, but it's sort of connected to the floor. It's with it, on it, in it. And on the outside of the building, you know, the fabric is winding its way round and round and round in a very kind of rough and random way round the pillars. It's not supposed to look kind of grand. It's supposed to look like it wants to belong. All I'm trying to do is, when this work is not here anymore, if you saw it here, you can still imagine the ghost of it being here, because in a sense all of that history of exchange, of the accumulation of wealth, is very central to this city. Those stories are weaving in and out even if you can't see them. So yeah, definitely with fabric you can do that in a kind of way that sort of is more physical, really. You can wrap it, you can twist it, you can lay it, you can push it around and belong in a different way than hard objects like ceramics.
There's something about the materiality of textiles that permits it to travel. I know that some of those sets are currently on display, for instance, at the Sharjah Art Foundation. But when the kanga were installed at the Baltic in Gateshead, the audience could pull red rope and change the messages, engulf themselves in the fabrics if they wanted to. How does placing textiles in a space, as we see here, for instance, enable a kind of participation with a museum or a collection that they mightn't do otherwise?
When people come to a museum or a collection, you can't touch anything because the things are very valuable and very treasured by those audiences themselves. You know, they don't necessarily want to touch them in the same way that you might in a department store. But I think when audiences come and they're very fond of a place, they know it well, or they've come to see something particularly fine, like ceramics or some oil paintings, I think there's something about making an intervention that hopefully adds to the pleasure about the things that they think they already know about. So you pitching the contemporary work against the classical work or the building itself and saying, this is here, we're not taking it away, but we're giving you another layer that you maybe only knew a little about. But maybe you knew a lot about it and you're bringing some information even to the museum and being part of that, kind of brokering a conversation between the two.
Seeing your works, for instance, in Sharjah, another port city, must be really interesting because it's placing them in the context of Indian Ocean histories, East-East histories, as opposed to Western European canons. I know one of the works, for instance, you've installed there is Zanzibar, a series that you originally produced in the 90s.
It's 9 diptychs, quite large paintings, and they're all of them patterned. There are no people in them. If you look very carefully, in some you'll see shells, in some you'll see cloves, mosquitoes, tiny sort of references to my relationship with Zanzibar, where I was born. And the installation in the Sharjah Art Foundation was a reiteration, if you like, of a work that was first made in the 1990s, but then recommissioned by Nick Akins at the Van Abbe Museum. He commissioned Magda Stavaska to make a 30-minute sound piece that responded to this work, and he was the one that had the original idea of hanging these paintings that usually are on the wall in the middle of the space. So you get this whole experience of being in front of the paintings, behind them, going around them. The paintings are talking to each other. And at the same time, in the sound piece, I'm talking about how I made the work, how the work came into being in the very first place, the visit to Zanzibar. I read texts from a guidebook that my African father sent my English mother before she went to Zanzibar. And things really close to me, very emotional, personal things that are to do with the death of my father and that passage of time from being born in the early 1950s to making this work in the late 1990s. There are very few curators who would have the courage to commission that in the first place, so to commission another artist to work with me on a piece that's already sort of in the canon, if you like, and then for Dr. Omar Khalif to give it such a lot of space and time and beautiful galleries in Sharjah.
Absolutely, and you've previously worked with object museums and many regional collections, saying that you get more freedom working in those spaces than in conventional arts institutions. On other episodes of Empire Lines, we've spoken with historians and curators like Dorothy Price and Griselda Pollock. For so long, as part of the Black Arts Movement in the 80s, you fought for representation of not just yourself, but of so many influential artists. And I wonder for you, in the context of the Holborn Museum now, what it's like to see the works here today.
It's really great to see the works here today, actually. I have to say, you know, before I won the Turner Prize, it was these kinds of places and spaces that I was showing in. Although it's quite restricting in a way to show in these kinds of spaces because the walls, the floors and the ceilings are very, you know, valuable and protected. But in terms of the freedom of ideas, they allow very often the making of new work that responds to the space and to the collection. And that's what's exciting for artists, you know? So all along, these kind of spaces were doing this. It was the kind of art galleries that we could never get into, to get our work considered beyond the politics and into that landscape of contemporary practice. So it's really rewarding now to see, you know, Sonia Boyce winning the Golden Lion at Venice, or Veronica Ryan winning the Turner Prize, Claudette Johnson at the Courtauld. You know, they're great moments, and they seem sort of old-fashioned, but they are showing that something shifted. Of course, it shifted 30 years too late for some of us, but these whole questions are opening up. Younger artists, curators, audiences are seeing that it's possible. And really, in the end, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to change history. And I think to some degree, for some of the time, we're succeeding.
Lubaina, as you can imagine, I've got thousands more questions I'd love to ask you. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Lubaina Himid, Lost Threads, runs at the Holborn Museum in Bath until the 21st of April 2024. For more, you can read my article. You'll find all the links in the episode notes. Empire Lines is produced by Yelena Sofronievich. For more episodes, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.